We're going to now welcome the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, Dean McPherson. He's also a guy who visited me when he was, I suppose, a relatively young, because he's still young, a DA Member of Parliament, when we had a little break in the UK for 3 years, 2016 to 2019, setting up our overseas operation. Thank heavens we did. Also getting out of the chaos that existed in South Africa, especially for smaller media companies at that time. And Dean came along to my office, which was 2 meters by 2 meters. I imagine 2 meters by 2 meters, for which I paid 21,000 rand a month. That's London. Those are London prices. And we had a wonderful conversation. And since then, I've obviously, when you meet somebody and you interact with them, you follow their career. And his career has been stellar. Not only is he the minister in the Government of National Unity in a very interesting portfolio, and he's going to be telling us more about that, think construction mafia, but he's also the head of the Democratic Alliance in this province. And a province where they are polling extremely well, best ever, for the local government elections that are coming up just around the corner. In the previous 22 years, just to give you some context, the South African government blacklisted two construction extortionists, two. In Dean McPherson's first 10 months in office, he's blacklisted 52. So if you don't think the Government of National Unity is working for you, just think about that stat. His background, he came up through eThekwini ward politics and the DA's KwaZulu-Natal caucus before taking on public works and infrastructure. In 2024, you remember the argy-bargy that went on between the ANC and the DA in putting together the Government of National Unity. He inherited a portfolio where 79% of projects were running late, 79%. And the construction mafias were costing the country, it's been quantified, about 17 billion rand a year. Now, Davi Roert will be able to give us a precise number, but that's probably one percentage point or more of VAT that they were costing us directly. His answer was a national war on building site extortion and a plan to export a template that had been used in Cape Town so successfully. Cape Town currently is one of its projects, the My City projects, capital expenditure is greater than all of Johannesburg. It just shows what good governance can do, especially when it comes to the thing that drives economies, and that's infrastructure. Please welcome the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, Dean McPherson.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's leading boutique wealth manager, trusted to guide families for over 22 years. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Thank you very much, Alec, for that very warm welcome. When I looked at the speakers list and I only saw one minister, I thought to myself, it's either you really want to only hear from me, which you couldn't find anyone else. So hopefully you'll be able to answer that question. And let me just say to Bernard, if he's still here, I will certainly let you know the next time I walk into a Pringles store and we can see if we can maybe do a deal on the outfits that I wear. There's a phrase that South Africans have become far too accustomed to hearing, and that is, this is just how things are. The potholes are just how they are. Burst water pipes, that's just how things are. Sewage spills, failing substations, collapsing municipal roads, aging public buildings, it's just how things are. After years of decline, we begin to treat infrastructure failure almost like the weather, something that happens to us rather than something that we have the power to change. I don't accept that, and neither should you. There is nothing inevitable about infrastructure decline. Infrastructure fails because of choices. choices about maintenance, about investment, procurement, about whether non-performing contractors will face consequences, and choices about whether someone is actually held responsible when a project that should have taken 2 years takes 10. Different choices produce different outcomes. And fortunately, we do not need to travel abroad to see that. We can look at the city of Cape Town as an example, and Alec mentioned that a moment ago. That city is investing approximately 40 billion rand in infrastructure over the next 3 years, including major expenditure on water, sanitation, electricity, roads, public transport, and informal settlement upgrading and housing. And this is a stat that should really concern all of us. Cape Town is now spending more on infrastructure than Johannesburg, eThekwini, and Bloemfontein combined. And while that is great for Cape Town, that is deeply problematic for the other metro centers in this country. Now, that does not mean that Cape Town is perfect. I know, because I have a house there and I get a monthly rates bill from them, so I know it's not perfect. But it does demonstrate something important, that decline is not inevitable, and infrastructure investment is a choice. But also, infrastructure investment is an economic strategy. A city that expands its water infrastructure investment can approve more housing and industrial development. A city that invests in electricity capacity can accommodate more factories. A city that maintains its roads lowers costs of transport for people and goods. And when investors believe that infrastructure around their businesses will still function in 5, 10, or 20 years' time, they're willing to invest more capital. And so the Western Cape's unemployment rate of 19.6% compared with 32.7% nationally is important. But infrastructure alone does not explain that difference. But functioning infrastructure is one of the foundations on which investment, employment, and economic growth becomes possible. And that brings me to one of the most important measures in our economic language. Many might not know about it or have heard about it, but it is four very important words: gross fixed capital formation. It is a measure of how much money government and the private sector spend on long-term physical assets like infrastructure. It's a phrase and a term that we should all become obsessed about. I would argue that we might even want to become more obsessed about that than the crime rate, than how well the Springboks are doing, or any other particular fancy that we have. Because if we don't obsess about that number, we're going to be in more trouble, and I will explain why. In my view, it's a measure we should worry about, but as I said, receives far too little attention. The National Development Plan, all those years ago, set a target of 30% of GDP for gross fixed capital formation. The medium-term development plan adopted by this current administration has set a target of 20%. But today, we are at 13.7%, and we have seen a decline of 1.1% over the last year. So we're no longer even halfway to our outer target, and we are now further away from our medium-term target. So what does that mean? It means that we are spending less today than we did a year ago on the important infrastructure that our country needs to succeed. How is this possible? How is it possible with a trillion rand that we have budgeted for over the next 3 years for infrastructure, and we are actually spending less on it? Why this number is so important is because unless it increases, there is no credible path to sustained high economic growth without higher investment. And as I said, the great irony is that we have a trillion rand worth of public infrastructure investment over the medium term, with municipalities expected to roughly spend 205 billion rand alone. The bigger problem is our ability to convert money into actual infrastructure. So while infrastructure investment is the fastest growing line item in the budget, and that's certainly good news, that's a good change from debt servicing costs, fixed investment is actually decreasing. So what could possibly cause this contradiction? Consider what Infrastructure South Africa, an entity that falls under me, recently found when we analyzed government procurement. During 2025, 2,549 tenders for infrastructure were advertised. Of that, only 433 or 17% were awarded. So roughly only one in six tenders were actually awarded. Another 279 were cancelled before closing, and 1,837 were recorded as closed without an award having been concluded at that point, which was either still under evaluation, evaluated without a contract being awarded, or abandoned after evaluation. National Treasury's e-tender data, using different methodology, produced a slightly higher figure, but still found out that only four in ten tenders advertised were awarded. But I think that that included a larger cross-section than we did. So that tells us something fundamental. South Africa actually has a tender problem, and not the one that you're accustomed to reading about. We're not awarding tenders instead of awarding the wrong tenders. Something deeply ironic in that. So the data therefore tells us that we don't have a money problem as it relates to infrastructure. We have an execution problem to deploy finance to projects. And this is exactly the problem I've tried to tackle since becoming the minister over 2 years ago. Not by announcing another infrastructure strategy, but by changing the machinery that is supposed to deliver it. The first change has been to put project preparation at the center of infrastructure delivery. Too many government projects enter procurement before they're even ready. And that's what the data has shown. Feasibility work is incomplete. Land issues are unresolved. Approvals are outstanding. And funding has not been properly structured, including through blended finance instruments. Risks have either not been allocated correctly or not been allocated at all. And then government goes to tender, and we act surprised when the project is delayed, cancelled, or becomes more expensive. So what have we done about it? Since I became minister, we have committed 600 million rand to project preparation support over the medium term. So we have taken on the responsibility of making sure that tenders are properly prepared and packaged so that they, when they go to bid adjudication, they have a better chance of being executed. Our first project preparation bid window attracted 277 submissions worth approximately 322 billion rand. So what does that tell us as well? We don't lack money, and we don't lack projects. We lack execution. ESA is now providing preparation support to more than 24 projects with a capital value of approximately 148 billion rand, while 15 have already completed their preparatory work. So we are now on that road to making sure that we get these projects ready for bid adjudication. We have since opened now bid window 3 to deepen that pipeline. And this work is beginning to produce investment outcomes. An institution that takes viable projects, removes blockages, brings investment, and gathers government together, gets capital into the ground. That point is now obvious. Our construction book now contains more than 250 funded projects, up over 100% in just 1 year, by the way, valued now at over 268 billion rand, providing contractors, investors, and suppliers with greater visibility from end to end. On Friday last week, I hosted our first ever deal-making session with 5 infrastructure projects valued at 53 billion rand that we are actively working to make investment ready before bringing in development finance institutions. So we sat around the table with DFIs and these five projects, and we pitched them to DFIs after having done the preparatory work. We have decided that we cannot just act as spectators, but we must become active participants and partners in these projects to get them over the line. So this just gives you some of an idea of the work that we're doing on a macro level. But there's also more focused work within the department that has become a key mandate for reform to drive fixed investment. Our priority reform has been to build a credible infrastructure pipeline that crowds in public money. Sorry, private capital, I should say. The second has been to fix the institutions responsible for actually delivering infrastructure. And perhaps the clearest example is something called the Independent Development Trust. You may or may not have heard it. When I entered into office, the IDT was in deep institutional trouble. There were serious governance concerns. Confidence from client departments had collapsed. Its financial position was precarious. It was technically bankrupt. And there were legitimate questions about whether the organization had a future. And we had a choice. We could either shut it down or try and rebuild it and fix it. And if we had chosen to shut it down, we would have put in jeopardy hundreds of schools across the country being built, hundreds of clinics, the social infrastructure that so many South Africans in rural communities depend on. So instead, we chose to do something about it. We fired the previous board and appointed a new ethical board. We pursued investigations, including myself personally charging the former CEO for trying to bribe a journalist. You saw that all live on TV. And by the way, Alec, the 6th of August is when I opened that case against them. Still hasn't been arrested. You bribe someone live on TV and you still don't get arrested. But maybe that's a different conversation. And where serious allegations arose, officials have been suspended and criminal complaints were laid. I think that we've seen the exit of 43 implicated individuals from the IDT. But at the same time, we've also rebuilt its ability to deliver. And the result is in the numbers. The IDT's confirmed order book has increased by 2 billion rand to approximately 6 billion rand just in 12 months. Its cash position has improved dramatically from near bankruptcy, and we have seen a massive increase in cash on hand. And in the last financial year, it completed 279 social infrastructure facilities against a target of 244. That is what institutional reform looks like at its most core. Not simply by changing an organogram and announcing a turnaround strategy, an institution that previously could not begin or could not deliver is now delivering because it has leadership. The third change is that stalled projects can no longer simply be allowed to remain stalled indefinitely. We created what we called a special delivery program within the department to intervene where projects have become trapped in the system and bureaucracy. The Durban Forensic Science Laboratory is a good example. After years and years of delay, our intervention got that facility completed and handed over to the SAPS within 12 months. There was no forensic laboratory in KZN. It had been flooded and damaged, and there was no plan to get it up and running. In 12 months, we got it up and running, handed over to the SAPS. Sarah Bartman Center of Remembrance in Hankey in the Eastern Cape. It's 10 years overdue. 10 years overdue. Contractors have come and gone. We are now set to finalize and finish that program in October 2027. So the principle is straightforward. When a project fails, we must identify why, identify who is responsible and hold them accountable, and then fix it. For too long, projects simply drift from one financial year to the next while everybody explains why someone else is responsible. And that culture is coming to an end. The fourth reform is consequent management in the construction sector itself. Government cannot demand better procurement while continuing to award work to contractors who defraud the state, abandon sites, or repeatedly fail communities. And the numbers are extraordinary. I won't repeat them Alec, you did so well for me. Bad contractors must understand this, that government does not owe them another tender. We demand value for money for every rand that we spend, and we will ensure that that is achieved. The fifth reform has been around one of the most destructive risks and dangerous risks facing infrastructure in this country, that is the so-called construction mafia. When I entered office, criminal syndicates and so-called business forums had become increasingly confident that they could arrive on construction sites, intimidate workers, demand money, and shut down billions of rands of economic development and activity without consequence. That does not only delay a project, ladies and gentlemen, it changes the entire investment decision and narrative about South Africa. No investment or investor, local and international, is willing to put capital into sites where criminal organizations run amok. And so we brought government, law enforcement, and the construction sector together. And everyone told me, Dean, don't go down this road. It's too dangerous. You're wasting your time. They're too powerful. I wasn't prepared to accept that. Since then, more than 770 cases of construction-related extortion and intimidation have now been reported. But more importantly, Alec, 241 arrests and 176 convictions have taken place since then, when everyone told me it couldn't be done. In KwaZulu-Natal, here in this province, the worst affected of them all, we've seen construction disruptions fall from nearly 60 a month to less than 10 in 2 years. And Cabinet has now approved the Integrated Social Facilitation Framework to take this work even further, because it creates a clear process and legitimate process for community participation. And they now become our first line of defense and our partners in protecting infrastructure. Local businesses now understand how they can compete fairly, and no one has the right to arrive on site and make threats. Where there is legitimate grievances, we deal with them, and where there is extortion, we arrest them. Ladies and gentlemen, we're beginning to see evidence that the construction sector can respond when conditions and confidence improves. After years of contraction, construction is starting, slowly but starting, to return to positive growth. Employment in construction has declined in some areas, but it is also, as I said, turning around. And we have to work harder to make sure that construction is a job-creating sector in our country. Lastly, and I'll finish with this because I'm running out of time now, our biggest risk remains in municipalities. And that is why we have identified local government infrastructure as a key priority for us, where we have launched a pilot project called Adopt a Municipality to work with 4 municipalities where we help them to capacitate their operations to get projects off of the ground and going. Some of these municipalities only have budgets of 600 million rand a year, and between the 4 of them, we've been able to secure 8.4 billion rand worth of new infrastructure investment into them. Ladies and gentlemen, let me end with this. What we're doing in public works is not easy. We know that it is part of the broader economic reform agenda in our country, and we have a choice. We can either press on with the difficult but necessary reforms, or return to business as usual. I want to echo the optimism of people like Jordan Lewis and Christo Visa. South Africa is worth fighting for. The going is tough. The obstacles are at every turn. And there's an enemy around every corner waiting to stop our momentum. But I am more convinced than ever, after serving in government for 2 years now, that if we stay the course, we can make South Africa a better place for all who call it home. Thank you so much.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth. A Mauritian trust offers a powerful solution for global estate planning. Invest better with Brenthurst. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.